Hey, it's Daniel Tardy. Thanks for listening to the Entree Leadership Podcast. Did you know that the lessons taught by Dave in this podcast are a part of our Entree Leadership Master Series event? Join us at our next event to hear the entire Entree Leadership curriculum in person. This is a special edition at our office in Nashville, Tennessee, May 5th through the 11th. To get more details or to register, give us a call at 888-22-PEACE. That's 888-227-3223. Or check out the Master Series event at entreeleadership.com.
Welcome to Dave Ramsey's Entree Leadership Podcast. This is a place to learn what Dave Ramsey and his team teach about leadership and business. On today's show, we answer your questions. That's right, the listener. We have gotten a ton of questions in from you guys wanting to know, how would we handle things? How would we handle this situation? What would you do in this place? What would you do with this thing? So today we're going to do one of our most popular episodes, which is a question and answer episode. These always get some of the most downloads ever. The questions are coming in from chrislocurto.com. We've also got some questions coming in from podcast@entreeleadership.com. So in the future, know that's exactly where you should ask your questions. Now, who am I? My name is Chris Locurto, and I am your host for the Entree Leadership Podcast. Now, last week, we did an interview with John Gordon, and we heard a lesson from Dave talking about the no gossip policy. Another phenomenal episode. A lot of downloads. You guys loved that one. We've gotten some great responses. Today, we're answering your questions. So one thing I want to do is I want to start by welcoming back to the studio, Chris Hogan. Welcome, sir.
Well, thank you, sir. It's a pleasure to be here.
So good to have you back again. Folks, if you do not know, if you have not listened to the Financial Peace episode that we did, the interview with me and Chris, make sure you go back and listen to that. That was pretty powerful. So glad to have you in. The way we do this, folks, if you don't know, Chris is going to be asking a bunch of questions. We're going to try and tackle everything that you guys have sent in, or, well, there's no way we're going to get everything, but we're going to tackle as many as we possibly can.
So, absolutely.
So let's just start with our first one.
Fantastic. All right, Chris. With smaller businesses that don't have a lot of resources and a lot of opportunity and things to do like we do here, mm-hmm. what are some things that you would give them tips for the hiring process? You know, is it practical for them to do exactly like we talk about in Entree Leadership, where you take a lot of steps? Or are there some areas that, what are some things they need to really focus on doing?
Mm-hmm. Okay, and that came in from Matt McWilliams.
Yes.
That's a fantastic question. The thing is this. People look at our hiring process. If anybody knows anything about us, they know our hiring process is very lengthy, very long process, and the reason is simple. We normally, as entrepreneurs, as leaders, we'll take in a couple of – we're so busy, we get into crisis mode. We realize we need a warm body and a seat somewhere, and so we'll take in three resumes and we'll hire. Then we find out 90 days later, this was just a huge mistake. We did not get the right person. They didn't fit. We oversold the position. Whatever it is, it was the wrong thing. So no matter how big you are, it is not about is there a certain length of process because of the size of the company. The process of the hiring should be long because you want to get the right person in the seat. So for us, we're going to say the same thing. You need to make sure that you are budgeting your hiring. Yes, I did say budgeting your hiring. And what I mean by that is you should be planning out your hiring well in advance. Don't wait till there's a crisis and then you have to find somebody. If you're focusing on it in a long term, you know what's coming up, then you can start the process. Then you don't have to just go through three resumes and hire somebody. You can get a decent amount of people. As you go through that process, you need to make sure that you're not doing all the talking. Let them do some of the talking. Find out something about them, because as entrepreneurs, we get so excited about our widget. You know, this is our thing. This is our company. We love it. Take a look at it. How great is it? Don't you think it's fantastic? And then they get so excited. They smile and they nod the whole time. And you go, oh, I love this person. Hire him. And then
that's exactly right. And think about this, Chris. Anybody can look good on one date.
Oh, so yes.
I mean, you've been there?
I've been there too.
So, I mean, you want to meet people more than one time.
Right.
Right? And you want to make sure your mindset is that, hey, am I asking the relevant questions?
Right.
And absolutely. So you want to see them at different points in time. And I learned that the hard way.
Yeah. Oh, I've made so many bad hires in my early days. Oh. So yes, the process needs to be strong. It needs to be lengthy. Don't sell, you know, his question about, do you do a sales pitch for the organization? Don't sell your organization. let them know, but let them ask the questions. And one last thing I always say on this is I don't hire anybody who says I can do that. I don't want somebody who can do the job. That person, once I hear somebody say, oh yeah, I can do that, I'm done.
Wow. I never thought of it that way.
I don't want somebody who can do the job. I want somebody who goes, please let me be a part of this.
Right. And you know what? If anybody's got to do some selling, it's the person
it's the person.
Yeah. As the owner, don't sell them on your company.
Right.
They need to be selling you on why they can come in to help you go where you want to go.
Absolutely.
Good. Very good. All right. Well, we got another one here from Kyle Wilson. He says he runs a small web design business with a few interns, but he says he's a perfectionist. He always wants to do the task himself, so he's struggling with delegating. And so he can't find anybody to do it as fast as he can or meet his standards. So he has no reason to distrust people to do good work, but how does he stop himself from getting in his own way of his growth?
Yeah.
It's a good question.
Kyle, this is tough because we all face this. Every single leader faces this at some point in their, well, in the beginning of their leadership. Mm. The difference is when you come to realize that the whole point of delegating, the whole point of growing your business is to duplicate yourself. If you cannot delegate properly, you cannot grow properly, period. And Kyle, you are not the only person. Everybody goes through this. There comes a time when you become more mature in your leadership. And when I say that, I don't mean older. I mean, you come to a point where you realize if I'm going to grow this thing, it can't be me. It has to be team members. The issue is the reason why so many people don't delegate is because they think this delegation process is the thing that they learned from their bad leader before them. Here's this thing. Go do it. Oh, great. You screwed it up. Fantastic. I'll have to do it over again. All right, here we go. Now I have to do it. That is terrible delegation. It is the most abused thing in leadership. People don't understand it. Instead, what you should be doing is understanding the way that I'm going to delegate something is I'm going to be there to make sure that they have everything they need to be successful. If I can make them successful in the thing that I've delegated, then they can do it again. And then I can delegate something else, and I can delegate something else.
Well, I heard you also one time during the Entree Performance Series here in Nashville talk about that when you delegate to somebody, you're telling them, I trust you, I have confidence in you, I believe in you now and in the future.
Right.
And it's one of the things where you're going to have growth.
Yeah.
Because if you trust me and know I can do it and I'm open enough to come to you if I have questions, now we've got a good relationship.
Absolutely.
And things can get done.
Yeah. And the thing is, I'm treating you with dignity when I do this. What we tend to do, again, is we'll give something to somebody and they don't know how to do it. Why did we think they knew how to do it in the first place? You know, we'll give it to them and then they fail at it. And then we go, well, I guess you're just terrible at this. And so we as leaders have done a bad job in this process. So, and one thing that Stephen M. R. Covey said on the podcast that we did a long time ago, he said, don't just delegate the tasks, delegate the results. It's easy to delegate tasks and then they can do the task. One, do this. I got all these things done. Great. But what happens is they didn't find the little things that, oh, this affects this. Oh, this is what your outcome was? Oh, well, I didn't realize that. Otherwise, I would have done this differently. So delegate the results in the process as well. But be there every single moment to go, do you have everything you need? Is there any questions you have? Is there anything you don't understand? And know that when you're delegating for the first time to somebody, if they're immature as well, then they're going to try not to ask any questions.
Well, and people don't get that.
Yeah.
Because they want to look like they can handle it.
Absolutely.
And it's one of those where everybody has set each other up to fail.
Right.
The leader has because they're not inspecting what they expect, and the individual doesn't have open dialogue to get some guidance.
Right.
And so I tell business leaders, listen, talk about what the results look like, but let the individual be focused on how they get there.
Yeah. Absolutely.
If you truly trust them.
Sure. Absolutely. And be there for them, but also understand that, you know what, they've come from a bad place too. They've had bad leaders in their past. So let's have some grace in this process.
Okay. Now it's funny that we were just talking about being involved with people and making sure that we're communicating. Listen to the question from David. What's the best way to deal with a boss who micromanages and is constantly interrupting and preventing things from getting done?
Oh.
So this is a little bit different from delegating. This is a micromanager, Chris. What does David do with this?
We kind of look at micromanaging here two ways. I believe that there's two types of micromanaging. There's the micromanaging that the world knows. Hey, did you get that done? Did you get that done? Did you get that done? Is that not done yet? What are you going to do? When are you going to get that done? That's the kind of person that people hate. Oh, The kind of micromanaging that we like is in that first 90 days or in the first part of a project, hey, is there anything I can do for you? Is there anything I can do to help? You micromanage the daylights out of them to make sure that you're setting them up for success. And if they can't ultimately do it, then you know this isn't the right person in that process. This is the first option, obviously. And the thing is that the reason why somebody micromanages like that is because of usually a couple of reasons. That's how they were treated. That's all they know. Somebody has browbeat the daylights out of them doing the same exact thing. And so they figured this is the way I'm supposed to do it. There's somebody above them who's pressuring the daylights out of them as well, you know, constantly on top of them. And obviously, by far, the biggest thing is they don't understand how to lead that person in the process. So you can't just turn around to this leader of yours and go, you know, you're a really bad leader.
That'd be the quickest way to find the exit.
That's right.
Yeah.
So instead, what you have to do is start saying, hey, listen, let's go over what I've done so far. How did I do in this process? What did you think about when I did this here? Mm-hmm. Can you give me a good review, or just give me a review on what you think on when you've handed these things off? Have I missed anything, or has there been anything? And as they walk through it, then you can ask the questions. Okay, so can I ask this favor? On this next process, can I have a go at it? Do you mind if I give this a try and see? Let me see how far I can get, and if I have anything, I'll come to you with some questions. And kind of try and do the can I have the responsibility thing. Ultimately, if that doesn't work, then you've got to start pushing back and saying, hey, listen, I'm not understanding why, if I've done good with these processes, can you explain to me? Can you help me to understand why we're discussing that again right now?
I like that. And especially if you have defined checkpoints, yes, where as we go through the process, we're going to meet,
right,
and get some feedback, you can begin to kind of control that.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right. It is the way the leader was treated before. Mm-hmm. And so it's amazing how stupidity will begat stupidity. Gosh, you know, it's not healthy. And I can tell you right now, people will leave a micromanager because they can't breathe.
Right.
The boot's on their throat. Mm-hmm. So give them some space. Let them show you. Here's the thing too, Chris, for a leader, you want to be able to have trust in the people you have there. So if you have things you have to go tend to, you know things are getting done.
Yeah,
absolutely. You don't want it to be about you. Right. It's not about you as a leader.
Yeah.
It's about the team.
A good leader.
A good leader.
A good leader.
I agree.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, we've got another one here from MKOKC from chrislacurtle.com. Here's the transition I am in the middle of. As my company grows like crazy, how do you best build systems that work once you go from a solo operation to having a team?
It's a fantastic question. It's a very it can be a very lengthy question, so we'll do the best that we can here. The thing that you have to understand is the whole point of building a team is to grow the company. So it stops being about you, and it starts being about your team. Now, one thing, if you come to Entree Leadership, one of the very first things you will hear me say multiple times throughout the event is, it is your job as a leader to make your team successful, not the other way around. And for so many young leaders and old leaders as well that don't get this, they constantly think it is my team's job to make me successful. Even if it's subconscious, they still believe that. Your job is to make them successful. So the systems that you want to start setting up is how am I going to grow this business? What are the things that we're doing really well? What are the things that we're not doing well? And when I say we, at that point, it's just you. Hmm. You know, what are the things that I've done, not done? What can I do to, you know, what direction do I want to go? The biggest thing that you need with a team is integrity. If you don't have integrity with your team members, then they're not going to stay. You're going to have issues all throughout that place. The second biggest thing that you need is vision. If they don't know where they're going, if they don't know what they're showing up to work for every day, then they're showing up for a paycheck. They're showing up for a job. If they don't have something greater than what they're seeing at the end of the week, they're not going to stay long, or they're not going to put all of their heart into it. So some of the systems that you need to set up, how am I going to make my team members successful? How am I going to show them a vision that's greater than what they're used to, or something that's greater than them? How am I going to tap the brain power of my team members? So many leaders want to be the ones that come up with all the ideas. I hate that process. It drives me crazy. If I think I'm the only one that God gave ideas to, then what's the point of having other people?
Well, and leaders also, they end up wanting to hire people that are just like them.
Just like them.
And which can be a terrible thing from a team standpoint.
Right.
You need to hire people, and Dave says this all the time, and I personally take it as a compliment that he hired somebody smarter than him. you take that as a compliment. But you get his spirit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He knows he has his strengths. He wants to get people that have other strengths. And then together, look at the strength we have.
Yeah.
And so as a leader, you have got to be able to do that. I would tell you, you've got to have a hiring system. Mm-hmm. You've got to have a plan. If you grow this team, are you going to have revenues to support it? Okay, now just because you want a team, that's a team's sake. Is it a team that's going to be effective? Mm-hmm. Or are there revenues to support this vision? And I think those kind of things are important to focus on.
Yeah, and along those lines, people always ask, well, when am I ready to hire? You're ready to hire when the amount of money that you're paying out is cost justified with the amount of revenue that's coming in. If you're not at that place, then do not start hiring fixed expenses, because that's what they become, that you can't pay for. So you have to have that money coming in. But as far as that goes, it needs to be a constant thing. People think, well, I'll just hire somebody. They're there. Hopefully they stay with me for 10, 20 years and I don't have to, you know, I can leave them alone, do their thing. That is not it. You've constantly got to be casting vision. You've constantly got to be making sure that you're making them successful. As you do these things, then you in turn become successful as well.
Well, Chris, and this is a perfect segue into the question from Tom Yeager, who talks about, okay, I've got the first team member. How do I know when it's okay to bring on the second and third? And you just talked about some of that.
Yeah.
So cost justifying. What else for number two and number three?
The way that I look at it, people always say, well, what's your first hire? You're an entrepreneur. When you start to hire your team, what's your first hire? It's very simple for me. I'm usually going to look for a salesperson. I'm usually going to look for a salesperson because I want that revenue. I need that revenue to come in. So that's usually going to be the first thing that I look for. Can I hire somebody? And the great thing about salespeople is they cost justify themselves. If they don't sell anything, they don't cost anything.
If they're set up right on compensation.
Absolutely.
Right.
So that's the goal. If I can get somebody in who starts bringing revenue in, they're making money. I've now got something I can play with money-wise. I can go from there. The time when you don't go that direction, when you hire an admin person, is if you're the one who's out there making it happen, if you're the one who's busting it, if you're the one doing all the sales, and then you've got all of this admin stuff that you've got to do on top of that, that is, you know, you're not spending time with your family, you're working 20 hours a day and it's just not working, then it would be a smart thing to bring somebody in to take the admin side off of you so that you can continue working. But again, ultimately, you're going to have to start bringing in salespeople to take the sales off of you, because your goal is going to be that you step away and you start operating with the team as opposed to being the one out there who's constantly selling.
Which I think is a huge point, and I get that question a lot, and I think it's worth repeating. So if you are the rainmaker, you're the person that's doing it and you're bringing in the revenue, then it's good to get an admin to help you.
Yes.
If you're not, you need that salesperson.
Right.
The right salesperson to bring in the revenue.
Yeah.
I want you all to really hear that, because I think that that will really help a lot of people in their business to start to think that way. People automatically go to admin.
Automatically. Always. And the thing is that even with, if you're the rainmaker, you still have to look, if I bring this admin person in, will it allow me to continue to do enough sales that it pays for more than just the admin person and I get some of my life back? So it's not just I'm so busy, I need to hire somebody, and then you can't afford them, and then they're frustrated, you know, 6 months down the road and you're ending up letting them go. Can I bring in enough revenue because they've taken enough stuff off of my plate to pay for that person and we're all happy?
I like the phrase, get some of my life back.
Yeah.
Because what kind of price would you put on that? I mean, that can be priceless.
I'm going to say that as an entrepreneur, as somebody who's very, you know, leave the cave, kill it, drag it home type of person, the longer you're doing it, the more you start to understand it's not the most important thing in life. You do it because that's what you do. You know, we leave the cave, kill something, and drag it home because we have to. We need to, you know, we need to feed. We need to be able to bring things in. We especially, for entrepreneurial types, men and women, we're just bent in a way that we've got to go after something. We need something that's exciting that we're tackling. But at the end of the day, what you have to understand is that if you're losing the rest of your life for what? For a job? For a company? What are you losing 10 years from now? 10 years from now, when you look back on your life and you go, okay, I've spent all of my time working. My kids think that the way to communicate with me is through text at dinner table.
Wow.
My wife doesn't know what my name is anymore. You know, I haven't seen the inside of a movie theater or something. You know, then what's it worth? Is it worth because you got some toys, you got a nice house, and you got a business that's working? The longer I've done this, and I've been leading for over 20 years, and the more, you know, I've met with thousands of business owners and leaders. The more and more I do this, the more I find the people that all they do is they have a life full of work, then everything around them doesn't seem to be working.
Well, and it's the balance aspect.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that life wheel.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at that, if you're flat in one area, it's going to affect another area.
Absolutely.
You know, you begin to think about that. You know, if you have one tire that's low, your alignment's going to get off, and it's going to mess up other things. Yeah. And so you begin to look at that, and you don't want to run flat in an area too long.
Right.
You know, and so hiring the right people, it's so important. Slow down, take the right time to get the right people on the bus.
Yeah.
It will either add to the quality of your life by having the right hire, or it will take away from the quality of your life because now you're stuck.
Yeah. And it's not, we're not saying, I want to make sure everybody understands this. There are times when the ox is in the ditch, you work hard. We are known for that. There are times like when we do a tour or something like that, we work hard. We work a lot of hours. We go crazy. We get things done, but then we get back to normalcy. We settle down and we don't want it to be a long-term thing. Mm-hmm. So there is that balance.
Okay. So we've hit on this and alluded to it in a couple different areas, but from Carol Dublin, she talks about, my question is related to communication. Okay. She says it's a challenge in her organization. They've started to do the weekly report to keep team members aware of and what's going on. And there's a little reciprocation, but she wants to know, how can I encourage good communication up the leadership chain and amongst her peers, and other than just being a good example, what are other practical steps they can take for communication?
I get this question all the time on the blog. It's amazing how many times I get this, because and the truth is, great people like Carol are listening to become a better leader, and she possibly has people above her, and I don't know because I don't know her leaders, but it's possible that she has people that aren't trying to become better leaders. They're just doing their thing. Again, I don't know if that's her specific situation. I'm just saying I get this question a lot. Here's the thing. In order to lead people, there's one thing you must have, period, and that's influence. You cannot lead without influence, even up. And people think, well, leadership is always down. You lead down. You lead, you know, down the chain. That's not true. You can lead all around. Maxwell's great book, 360 Degree Leader. You can lead in all directions, but the leading up is much more difficult than anything. And the reason why is because you have to have influence. Now, if you need to be leading up, there's already a problem. Not saying that if you lead up, there's a problem. I'm saying if there's a need that you have to lead up, because obviously there's something wrong up the chain,
right,
there's already an issue.
Right.
So if you don't have influence with the people above you, you're not going to affect change. Nothing's going to happen. So you have to start with influence. If you have the influence with the leaders above you, if they trust you, if they see that you've done stuff that has been successful, and they see that you're great with your team and they feel solid with you, then you can start leading in some of those areas of, hey, listen, what if we did this with the company? What happened? Hey, here's something I've started doing weekly reports, and here's what I've noticed. Have you guys seen this? Check this out. Look at how well this great communication, and look, I had them doing highs and lows, and I found this out, and I went over and I did this, and this changed this, and they can see.
And they can quantify it.
They can quantify,
yes,
that there's been some activity. There's
right.
been some, you know, some things that have come out of it that have been great. If you have that influence, you can start dropping those pieces. If you don't have that influence, the only thing you can do, in my mind, is start working on it, which may be a very, very long process.
I agree. And at the same time, I would tell Carol not to get frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just because you can make a suggestion,
yeah,
input can come from everywhere,
right,
but a decision lies at the feet of the leader.
Yeah.
And so it might be a great idea. If the leader doesn't want to, mm-hmm, then they're not.
Right.
But what Carol can continue to do is make sure she's doing a great job with her team,
yeah,
and the people around her. And I just want her to know, leadership has nothing to do about your position.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about your attitude and your effectiveness. And so she can lead, and she's doing a great job right where she is.
Right.
And I would tell her to continue to do that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Very good. Okay, so another question. This is coming from William. It says, I've listened to every episode multiple times. He loves the idea of being able to connect and get with other entree leaders in their area. Is there a place to be able to do that? And to tell him more about how can he get more connected?
We get that a lot as well. You know, how do I find other entree leaders? We're actually beta testing a site right now. So we've been things that we've been working on for a very long time. This is not a new question. It's been something we've wanted to do for a long time. The problem is we don't like to do anything halfway. So we have waited until we've had the resources, the time, all of that. So right now we're actually beta testing a site to help entree leaders get connected in more of an entree leadership style. You know, these are folks that understand the principles or trying to seek out the principles. So it's probably going to launch early next year. So we don't really have anything on that yet. But if you sign up for the newsletter at entreleadership.com, then the moment, and I think even as we're sharing some of the beta testing stuff, that may be sneaking out, but the moment we launch that bad boy, you'll be able to get that. In the meantime, we have a lot of loyal listeners that have started following at chrisocurto.com what they do, CeeLo Blog Tribe. It's a hashtag on Twitter, and there's a lot of information that goes out on that. It is insane. It has been phenomenal to watch this tribe that has built a group of entree leader followers and following principles talk about stuff. They've even got tweet chats that some nights, and unfortunately with everything that's been going on with me being away for a while, they've even had one recently where they will get online and talk principles and talk stuff like for hours. So it's pretty fantastic. If you get a chance, make sure that you go to the hashtag. There's two hashtags, CeeLo Blog, CLO Blog, and CLO Blog Tribe. So those are two great places to learn more.
Very good. The next one from Victor is talking about profit sharing. Mm-hmm. He says that he's done some form of it, like Dave says, but he feels like at times the profit sharing gets uncounted and people start to feel entitled to it. Mm. He's got two parts, but let's take that part first on the profit sharing. I mean, to me, I think the first thing people have to do is understand, Chris, listen to me, is profit that's being shared.
Right. That's the biggest thing.
It's big. It's not a bonus. Mm-hmm. Right? Because bonus is something you find.
Right.
Right?
Absolutely.
But if it's profit that's being shared, then that's a matter of them understanding that it is something that is being done over and above, mm-hmm. but it doesn't have to be.
Yeah.
And I think that's important for people to get.
Well, the reason why people don't understand this, and Victor, you're not alone in this. The reason why people don't understand this is, one, he's a doctor, right? He's running hard. He's very busy. And so he says, okay, I want to help out my people. I want to share with my people. So, hey, I'm going to start paying you this. And every month he just pays it out. And there's no excitement. There's no discussion. There's no nothing. And so it becomes a part of what they do. So, of course, they feel entitled because nothing's ever been said about it. It may have been said on the very front side, but that's it. It just happens to be, you know, and when you're hiring somebody new, oh, we have profit sharing that comes out on this day of the month and yada, yada, yada. That's all they hear. Of course, they're entitled. What you have to do is you have to lead your people into understanding, I'm bringing you in at a pay scale that is fantastic for you. I'm already paying you for a great job. The money that I'm, unless you're bringing them in and saying, hey, profit sharing is going to be a part of your pay, then that's completely different. But that's obviously not what he's doing. I'm bringing you in at a great rate already. I'm paying you for the service. I expect that you do a great job for this money that I'm paying you. On top of that, I have decided that I want to take from my money, my profits, and share with you if you continue to do a great job. If you continue to take care of the company, if you continue to take care of the customers, I'm going to kind of judge that and grade that, and I'm going to share with you my profits. Or if I'm married, my wife and I, my spouse and I are going to share with you our profits as we do this. When the profit sharing time comes around, the thing that we do here, we say from stage, hey, folks, it's profit sharing time, and people just automatically start applauding. I mean, it's hilarious. And we always say the same thing. Hey, you remember that this is something that we're sharing with you. You know, this is something that Dave and Sharon and the P&L leaders, you know, this is something we're deciding to share with you. And remember, profits come when revenues go and the whole team yells up. And expenses go and the whole team yells down. And then the comment that always follows is, so you understand that you're self-employed. You affect the profit sharing. And the funny thing is some people go, oh, really? How much can I possibly? If I turn the lights off once, how can that? Well, shoot, we've got 300 and some odd people here. You know, if we're leaving lights on, if we're not being smart when we make purchases, one of the best things is our shipping department found if they made an adjustment on something, it saved us like $1,000 a day. It was insane. Well, that goes right into that profit sharing, and it affects the whole company.
I think you immediately have buy-in, right. Connection, and so people begin to look at things that they maybe wouldn't. You know, do we need to make those extra copies? Do we need to do this? Right. And to me, as a leader, that's what you want. You get your team thinking like an owner.
Yeah.
You know?
That's it.
And then, okay, Victor's second part, Chris. How would you incentivize a front desk position? So he must be referring to a receptionist.
Yeah, it's very difficult. That's one of the toughest positions for us to incentivize. And I will tell you, a great way to do that is a scale on their attitude. Okay, scale on their attitude. Because this is your first impression of your whole company. This is somebody that people are coming to, and every one of us has been in a doctor's office where we just didn't even want to talk to that person at the front desk because they're rude or
unhappy.
They're not happy.
No,
yeah. It's crazy. And the moment you notice that, you're like, I'm just going to fill out my paperwork and sit down. The doctor's office where I go to, they are the gals that run that front area are phenomenal. They're so nice. They're so sweet. There's not a time that I don't leave it because you kind of leave from a side door. There's not a time that they don't yell across the lobby, "Have a great day." I mean, every time I know it's going to happen. I've even tried to sneak out sometimes without them even noticing me just to see. And sure enough, once I hit that door handle, "Have a great day." So I look forward to that every time. So, if you have like a grading scale where you can say, how have you performed in this? How have you done? What is the response from our customers? As you as the doctor are talking to the person who's in your chair, if you're a dentist or whatever you're doing, and you say, "Hey, how's your experience been? You know, how's it been when you've come in and all that?" People are going to be honest. They're going to tell you the truth. "Well, I'm going to be honest with you. The guy at the front desk, he's kind of rude." Done. Now you automatically know. So I would do it from a grading scale.
Which, and I think another thing you can do, and I've told some business owners this, think of some other things that position can do for you.
Sure.
You know, can they begin to help with some marketing, some calling, some following up? I had one dentist, instead of the individual just waiting on people to come in, she proactively began to call clients to set up follow-up appointments.
Love it.
You know, the former clients that they'd lost. And he realized that she had saved or brought back in about $20,000 per quarter.
She's creating revenue.
She created revenue, Chris. Yeah. And I said, one of the things you can do to make that an indelible impression in her mind, share a percent of that with her.
Yeah.
And don't let it be a slided across the
sure,
table.
No.
This is a formal come in, sit down.
Look what
you've
you
done
did.
A great job. Look at what you've did. And I want to share this with you. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for what you do.
Oh, yeah.
I told him, I said, if you do that, watch that 20 turn into 40.
It's going to tell you big time.
Right? And at the same time, what you're sharing with her needs to grow.
Yeah.
And so to me, Victor, I think those are excellent ideas for you to put a plan in place.
Absolutely. With the understanding, that's the secondary part of the job.
That's
the first
right.
part is when they walk in the door.
So we got to keep what Covey says, the main thing is the main thing.
The main thing is the main thing.
I love that. Okay, Chris, this Scott Harvey sent you a question in, and I think this is one you and I can definitely relate to. He says he works as a full-time police officer. He owns his own speaking business on the side. So the details of speaking, booking, billing, bookkeeping, tech support, travel, everything makes him crazy. He just wants to show up, speak, connect with his audience, and then go home. Mm-hmm. That makes him sound really cold, but he's just not a detail person. He says, at what point does a virtual assistant make sense for him?
Yeah. That's a great question. And it kind of goes back to one of the earlier questions. It makes sense when you have enough revenue that you can afford to pay for somebody and it creates more revenue for you. If you can cost justify the position on if you go to chrislicurto.com, there's a little banner on the side for EA help. And we did a couple blogs about having stuff that I wrote about it. For us, you and I are gone all the time. We're gone all the time. We can't get to everything. We can't handle every email. It's difficult just trying to keep up with the social media stuff, much less come back to work. And then if we had to run, you know, we've both been in situations of running teams, departments, right. P&Ls, all that kind of stuff. There's no possible way we could do it. So there has to come a time where you look at your revenue and you go, if I've made $30,000, how much of that can I share? You know, how much am I willing to share? If I've made $100,000, how much am I willing to share? You know, if I'm willing to say, I'll take 10 grand and put that on an assistant for this year. Well, great. Talk to them, say, hey, how many hours will this get me? And now, you know, you can budget and you can schedule and say, great. I understand that I've got 5, 10, 15, 20 hours a week of a virtual assistant who's going to take care of me. It's done. It's laid out. Now that person becomes a part of your team and you have those hours. So for me, I'm going to say when you're doing two jobs like that, and most of you folks out there that are wanting to start a new business or you're in, you know, you're doing your business on the side, this is an important thing to look at.
It is. It is. And one of the things I would tell him is even though you have somebody that's going to help you, don't become so out of the loop that you can't do it.
Yes, definitely.
You know, because then you become a hostage.
Yeah.
right, if that were to go away. So that's something to definitely consider. I would also encourage Scott to take a look at his pipeline. How many speaking gigs are you going to have? Mm-hmm. Because you've got to be doing some stuff from a business development standpoint to get those.
Absolutely.
And so, okay. So that's
good. If you spent less time on the admin, how many more speaking gigs could you do?
I agree.
It makes you more revenue.
It does. It really does. Okay. Dalian Christensen sent in, what methods or tools does your organization do to pick the ideas to execute? I seem to have a lot of ideas, but I sometimes have trouble picking the right ones to focus on.
Dalian, here's the thing. You're asking a company that sees 1,000 great ideas every year and tries to execute on them. It has actually become an issue for us. It's become something that we have stepped back and said, listen, not every great idea needs to be executed. We don't have to go after every single thing. Because we're entrepreneurs, we've got a gazillion entrepreneurial minds inside this building. We have tons of ideas and they're all great. Well, all right, maybe 30% of them are, but they're great. It still turns out to be a lot. We look at them and we go, do that, go do that, go do that, go do that. And then what we end up realizing is, wait, do we have the resources for that? Do we have the personnel for that? Do we have all the stuff that we need to make that happen? And can we make it happen successfully? So a long time ago, we backed up and said, well, stop. Let's not go execute on every good idea. Instead, let's put something in place. So we have now with our board, we have a way of bringing in all ideas. Everything comes in. We take a look at every possible idea, where it's coming from. Do we have the resources in that area? Do we have the people to execute on that? Do we have a leader? Do we have a champion? Do we have somebody who can make this thing happen? In other words, if we did this one idea, and we've got 100 on the table, if we did this one idea, will it be successful? Or does it have a great chance to be successful? Once we've picked all of those out, then we take them and we go, okay, if we only did 10? If we only did 20 this year, which would be the top ones that we can do? We narrow that down and we say, okay, let's ask the question again. Do we have the resources? Do we have the time? Do we have the ability to do this? If so, when are they going to happen? Where are we going to drop them in place over the calendar? Who's going to do what? All of that. And then we run through that process and we start hammering those. The problem is you are never going to be short of ideas. You're never going to be short of opportunities. You're always going to think, oh, I've got to do that next thing. Oh, I've got to. What happens is you end up spreading yourself so thin that you start failing in the big areas.
That is exact. I was just thinking that. And you've got to be able to cull. I told one business owner, Chris, I was working with him. He had an idea every 32 seconds. Okay. No, seriously, he was wearing me out. And I told him, I said, okay, at some point we've got to stop thinking and start doing.
Right.
We need to find a place to put those down somewhere, but we got to focus and get stuff done. I tell business owners this. I make four piles. I tell business owners, you got to have what's on focus. That's the thing that we're doing right here, right now. What's on deck, mm-hmm. maybe coming up next. What's on hold, mm-hmm. right? Which means it's a great idea, but we don't have the resources or the time. And then the fourth one I love, on trash heap. Okay, because it doesn't make sense. We don't have 2,000 people to be able to do that idea. So let's put it on the trash heap.
Right.
So on focus, on deck, on hold, and on trash heap.
Yeah.
And those are the four categories.
The biggest thing to understand is on focus is your breadwinner.
That's right.
If you start pulling resources, if you start pulling attention, if you start pulling time away from on focus to make something else happen, then what ends up happening is on focus starts to become on trash heap.
You're absolutely right. And all the rock stars you had working on the on focus thing will leave.
And if you haven't already pulled them to the other thing, they absolutely will.
But think about it, Chris. It would be frustrating. I mean, you and I have to manage our time well. We don't have a choice.
Right.
But imagine if you were somebody that struggled with that and you weren't able to be able to focus on those things. Mm-hmm. Business owners hear that. Focus on the thing that's the breadwinner. Do the thing that matters. And as well as it grows and the revenue that comes in, it will give you opportunity to try some other things. Mm-hmm. But don't take your mind or your eye off the main thing. It's the thing that's keeping the doors open.
Sure, sure. And the reason why I feel so many people take their focus off the on focus is hubris sets in. We've been successful. We've done this really well. We've been really good at this. We now have some money. We can start focusing on other things, and then your attention goes that direction. Well, brother, thank you so much for coming in and do this. I know you got to get back on the stage here right now.
Absolutely. So. Thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely. How can people get more of you?
Well, you can follow me on Twitter at ChrisHogan360, or you can go to ChrisHogan360.com. I've got a blog that I'm trying to go to catch you. Okay, you're way ahead of me here with all these people. But you do a great job with your writing. But they can go to ChrisHogan360.com and look forward to joining you again. I always have a blast when I'm here.
Oh, this has been fun. This has been fun. All right, folks, we're going to continue on with the extended interview in just a second. But let's go ahead and wrap this bad boy up. This was a great podcast, a great question and answer episode, I believe. I think you guys hopefully will have enjoyed this. Coming up Thursday at 9 a.m. Central, we will be hosting the Entree Leadership Live Chat. Come stop by for an hour to kick off your workday and learn from fellow Entree leaders. By the way, did I mention that it's free? Still is. Always is. It is free. And that is this Thursday at 9 a.m. Central. Visit DaveRamsey.com/EntreeLeadership this Thursday and join in on the discussion. Remember, follow us on Twitter at Entree Leadership or at Chris Locurto, L-O-C-U-R-T-O. Email us at podcast@EntreeLeadership.com. And for daily leadership, make sure that you join us at ChrisLocurto.com. If you would like more information on our Entree Leadership events, make sure that you go on over to EntreeLeadership.com. Our next master series, which was just recently launched, is going to be May 5 through 11 here in Nashville. That one is going to be back here in Nashville. They have put together an incredible event that we are really excited. So if you want more information about that, again, the seating is limited to about 150 people. We like to keep this small and sweet and intimate. So make sure that you go to EntreeLeadership.com to get that information or call us at 888-227-3223. Well, that puts another Entree Leadership podcast in the books. I need to thank the people who make this happen every single time. Chris Mefford, our executive producer. Colin Fatke, our newly married audio engineer extraordinaire, who is very happy and married an incredible woman, Mallory, who's phenomenal. So we're so glad to have him back in the studio and doing what he's doing. Becky Powell, our producer and just all around great person. I don't know. That's the best I got today. Chris Hogan, thank you again for coming on.
Thank you, my friend.
Appreciate that. And of course, always Dave Ramsey. Folks, take this information out, change your leadership, change your life, change your business, and join us on the next Entree Leadership Podcast.